We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You are listening to KC Sports Network, proudly presented by M-Prize Bank. Up next, the latest on the Missouri Tigers from KCSN, which features multiple shows each week with Border War with former Missouri forward Jarrett Sutton and former Jayhawks guard Jeff Hawkins, and Mizzou That's Who with insider Gabe DeArmond, Maggie Johnson, and Tucker Franklin. The latest news, the top stories, and an insider perspective to keep you in the know. Make sure to follow us on your new home for Missouri Tigers podcasts, KCSN. And now, the latest on Mizzou Athletics.
Hello and welcome back into Mizzou That's Who, your podcast for Missouri Athletics here on KC Sports Network. I am one of your co-hosts, Tucker Franklin, here with Gabe DeArmond and Maggie Johnson. It's been a minute since we have recorded a podcast. We were kind of hoping that there was going to be some big news, some big waves that the Missouri Athletic programs would make to make us have to get back and record a podcast. But nothing too monumental. They did some moves here and there, and that's what we're here to talk about, kind of give you a summer recap of what's gone on since the last time we recorded. Gabe, it's been a minute since we have talked. How are you doing? How is everything going in Columbia?
I'm good. I appreciate that you messaged me yesterday and said, you know what? I just haven't talked to you in a while. I just want to talk to you. Can we just do a podcast? I don't know if you're even recording this, honestly. This might just be us hanging out on a stream here.
It would be a good idea to do that. But yes, no, Maggie, same way. We were in the group, and I was in beautiful St. Louis this last weekend while you were not there in St. Louis. I took in the Cardinals-Royals game the Memorial Day weekend. How are things going in the other side of the state?
I mean, our baseball team's not great. As you saw yesterday, we kind of got whooped by your Royals, but everything else has been pretty good. You know, I'm kind of enjoying the downtime. I'm sure you guys have also enjoyed some downtime. I know Gabe for sure is enjoying a little bit of the downtime that you have. But I'm also getting kind of psyched because once you kind of get to this point where you're a couple months away, I think we're right under 100 days away, is kind of that moment that you're ready for kickoff again.
For sure. It's 2 days less than that because big Thursday night showdown against South Dakota.
SEC. That's right. Yes.
Biggest game of the night, I think.
They did the nice little grilling video. That's what they started off with. I remember in that video, there was just somebody grilling some meats at the beginning. They're like, oh, yeah, by the way, we're playing on Thursday. That's kind of what they threw out at the end of it.
I just didn't think that was going to happen this year because, like, I just didn't think it was a game that TV would say, yeah, we want to put that on Thursday, but maybe there just aren't. I mean, last year, I know it was Louisiana Tech isn't the biggest school in the country, but like it's FCS or FBS, and FBS, yeah. You've heard of them and all that. I just didn't think TV would have that one on Thursday night, but I think it's a good deal for fans, and it sets you, look, if you're going to play a nothing game at the beginning, at least, you know, do it on a day where there are fewer other games to compete against.
Well, especially when you live in the state of Missouri, and you guys know how important the lakes are here in Missouri. I mean, that's what people do on holiday weekends. So, I mean, it's not a bad idea to not have to compete with that as Mizzou fans, because a lot of people spend that time down there. So, I mean, I'm going to be out of town, so I'm kind of excited that it's going to be on Thursday. So I'll be there.
Especially too, when you talk about like students, they're probably going home for Labor Day weekend. It makes sense to have that game up on a Thursday, so it's like the last thing that they do, right? Because, you know, those kids aren't going to class on Friday. They're just going to go ahead and go right on home after they wake up the next morning. So I think that's a great idea for them to move. They announced the – I thought it was funny. They announced the time, and they're moving the day of the South Dakota game up. But then they also announced the time of the last game of the season as well. So it was like the first and the last game. Here we go. We got these times. Black Friday traditional matchup for the Arkansas game. I don't think that that was a surprise for a lot of people. But potentially, with the schedule being moved around, could be one of the last times we have it on Black Friday.
Yeah, like I guess there's a chance eventually that's not going to happen. But every year they do this where they schedule the game on Saturday and then they announce in mid-May, hey, it's being played on Friday. No, we know. It's been played on Friday like 6 years in a row. We know when it's going to be. But yeah, that very well may change now, starting at least in 2024, because I guess Arkansas is the only team we actually know Missouri is going to play going forward.
I feel like the location's kind of more of the thing that's kind of up in the air, because I know we'd been in Little Rock for a little bit, and then we had been scheduled to play at Arrowhead during COVID, and then COVID moved that back to Columbia. So, I mean, I think now we're pretty steady going back and forth. But
I think they should just, like, rotate it. Like, 1 year it's in Jeff City, and then it's in Blytheville, and then Joplin.
They should play at the Springfield Cardinals field. You know how they do like the Pinstripe Bowl? How just like a football field just like doesn't really fit on that field, but they do it anyway. That's what they should do for the Missouri Arkansas game. But again, you mentioned the schedule, Gabe. I don't know if you guys have heard this, but Oklahoma and Texas are joining the conference. Kind of flew under the radar a little bit. And Greg Sankey at the commissioner at the spring meetings, that I think this was the only thing that happened at the spring meetings. There's nothing else Mizzou related that happened at the spring meetings, I don't think at all. We don't have to talk about it. Greg Sankey was asked about just kind of like the scheduling and what they're going to do. 8 SEC games, 9 SEC games. Gabe, what are your thoughts on kind of the set your three rivals and then have everything else rotate? Do you think that's the way to do it, or do you think that there's a better way?
I want 9 SEC games because I want more games that interest me.
Yeah.
Nothing is less interesting to me than going to cover 3 non-conference games that are basically name your school. Like the Louisiana Tech game last year, that wasn't interesting. It was boring. Delaware State, South Dakota. And I understand the FCS games are always going to happen, but like Northern Illinois, games like this, you only get 12 of these things. And I hate that 3 of them are basically just don't even count every year. We really get fired up for like what is the equivalent of a 9-week season, right? And in the SEC, it's an 8-week season. Everybody else is playing 9 at this point. And look, I kind of get Nick Saban's point. Like, why should Alabama have to have LSU, Tennessee, and Auburn when Missouri's out here getting Arkansas and Vandy every year? I understand. That's not equitable. That's not fair. You know,
they're also playing Mercer.
Well, Missouri's playing South Dakota, but that's not, year that he has to play 3 teams that are usually in the top half of the league standings. Like, I can understand Saban wanting Alabama's 3rd SEC game to be Mississippi State or South Carolina or frankly Missouri, you know, and I know Eli Drinkwitz is firmly in I want 9 games. I wonder if he would feel that way if instead of Vandy, Missouri was getting Georgia every year.
Yeah.
You know, so I get Saban's point, but like, give me more games that are interesting. That's what we should be doing this for. I mean, I know we don't do anything in college sports for the fans except, you know, tell them, give us more of your money and we'll take more and more things away. And the other thing that made me laugh was that the SEC release or the story I read said one of the concerns was player safety. No, it wasn't. And no, it wasn't. You're not any more likely to get hurt playing Kentucky than you are Eastern Kentucky. That's stupid. Don't hide behind that.
I think I would be okay with an 8-game SEC schedule if they did something where it almost guaranteed that schedules were kind of a little bit more balanced. I think almost every year Mizzou plays in their non-cons, they typically play a Power Five school. I mean, at least we have the last few years. And most schools I would say do, but some, you look at some of the schedules this year. I know Saturday Down South put up some non-conference schedules, and there were some pretty weak non-conference schedules, and we're listed, I think, around the top number five or six in the SEC in our non-conference schedule, which I think is maybe even a little bit low, I would say.
Crazy, though, because, like, Missouri's non-conference schedule is, okay, Kansas State's a big boy game. That's a grown-up game. Memphis is like a teenager-type game, maybe.
They played in their conference championship last year, at least. I mean...
Look, Eli Drinkwitz loses to Memphis. We're going to be having a fun podcast that week. I'll tell you.
Oh, most definitely. I mean, in St. Louis, like, you're going to be in trouble if you lose that game in St. Louis, most definitely. But, I mean, I think if you figure something out where every school at least has to play a Power Five school and then maybe like a mid-major, I guess you would say.
And that is the current rule. Like, you do have to schedule a Power Five team. And I had read... Sam Pittman said if it goes to nine games, he thinks that would go away. So maybe there's no real difference, right? You're still playing nine Power Five games. I mean, I hate all non-Power Five games, honestly. I don't enjoy watching them, but I understand it is unrealistic for everybody to play 12 Power Five games.
Right. Nobody wanted to go to the New Mexico State game last year in November when, what was the temperature? 15 degrees or something.
Six.
Yeah, something ridiculous. Nobody wanted to go to that game. I didn't go to that game. I mean, let's be honest, I didn't go. So, I mean, I think, yeah, you need to figure something else out. And if people are going to complain that their schedule is going to be too hard for them to make a conference championship or something like that, you don't really deserve to make the conference championship if you're not beating those other teams anyways.
Well, and the other end of it is the teams that are, like, they don't want it because they're trying to get to 6-6.
Right.
You know, hey, I got to play in the Gasparilla Bowl to get my bonus and keep my job and all that. And I promise I just pulled that one out of, like, that was the bowl game that was in my mind. That was no more a shot in Missouri than it was anybody else. But, yeah, you know, I agree. It's the same discussion. Well, if playing Auburn instead of playing, you know, the East Iowa Bible School is going to keep you out of a bowl game, then you're not any good anyway.
Right. Do you even deserve to be in a bowl game? That's a conversation. And that's the point I was going to bring up. As Missouri fans, we should be looking at the schedule saying, okay, how can we sneak this sixth win in here? How can we get a sixth win to get into that bowl game? Because it certainly feels good to be in the postseason. I should say that in air quotes, postseason football when it comes down to it. But, yeah, when I was looking and kind of surveying what has gone on since we had last recorded, and in terms of football, not really a whole lot. They moved the spring game indoors, so nobody got to see it. And it was also the same. Was it the same day as the Princeton game? Maybe
it was the NCAA tournament.
Okay, that's right. Which terrible scheduling, by the way. Why do you have your spring game that early? We've already had that conversation. No need to feed a fed horse at that point. But I do think that it's been incredibly interesting that nothing has happened really since the last time we recorded. They did hire an offensive line coach. That's something.
You know what? It's good, though, that, like, I try to convince people of this every year. You don't want to hear about your football team in May and June. It's not good most of the time if you do. Now, the transfer portal's changed that a little bit, right? Like, they get an offensive lineman or two, got a defensive end. So that's fine. But I had this conversation with some people this offseason, and I'm curious what you guys think. Like, I think that the media and people who do what I do, it's made all of this worse. Like, we have taken what is a 4 or 5 month a year sport, and we've made it this 12 month a year thing. And thank God for me, we have, because I make a living off of it. But, like, nothing happens on June 2nd most of the time, right? Like, when I was growing up, it was just, hey, season's coming up in a couple months. That's cool. Early August, maybe I'll get excited for it. And then there's going to be 11 games and hopefully a bowl game, and that'll be cool. And then after that, I'm going to watch the NFL. And then it's college basketball season. And then it's Major League Baseball season. Well, now every sport is a 12-month-a-year thing where there's just never an off day, and we have to make everything into this super big story. And I can only speak for me, but I like nothing happening for a little while. I'm good. I have not worked very hard the last month, well, but I am not returning my paycheck.
That's one of the things, you know, last year where people were kind of talking about, you know, how Drink got his extension and his raise or whatever right before the Kentucky game. And people were questioning it, and I know we all questioned it as well. And I mean, valid, obviously, because it was weird timing. But think about the amount of work that coaches are doing now as opposed to what coaches were doing, you know, 5 years ago. It's insane. It's skyrocketed. It's not even close to being the same amount of work that, God love him, Gary Pinkle did. It's not even the same amount of work. So I would say that, you know, those raises make a lot of sense in hindsight. Maybe weird timing, but it does make sense that these coaches are getting paid more money than they were making before.
I mean, I think it's going to lead to a lot of burnout in coaching. And again, like, I don't want to convince anyone that I'm like digging ditches and doing manual labor, because my job is a lot easier than most people's are. But if you are involved, if your job is in any way involved in college sports now, there's really not a day off. There's not a time that you can just say, you know what, I'm just going to put my phone down, I'm going to turn it off, and I'm going to pay no attention. Because then your head coach could say something that gets put on Twitter as like a snippet, and it turns into this thing that it just isn't a thing. You know, you never know when something's going to happen. But coaches, it's even more so that way. I mean, Missouri had like 5 or 6 visitors on Monday, on Memorial Day.
Right.
Like, this is the nothing season. It's a holiday. Like, I think they really need to figure out a schedule that is going to give these guys a little bit of quality of life, and not, I'm going to spend 327 days a year either trying to recruit transfers or trying to recruit 16-year-old kids. Like, I think you're going to see coaches making money and going, you know what? I've already made like $14 million. I don't really got to keep doing this.
Yeah,
I'm going to go coach the XFL against Bob Stoops or do some games on ESPN or something.
Yeah, well, that brings up a question I want to ask you. We got to take a quick break first before I ask you this question, but I'm going to ask you before the break. This is a professional tease. Do you think that this kind of structure leads to kind of a restructure of how college football teams are kind of constructed? Is there going to be a GM? Is there going to be somebody in charge of a lot of recruiting to kind of take some stress off the head coach? We're going to get to that right after this.
Thanks for listening to KC Sports Network. Make sure you download our new app. Find it on the App Store or Google Play. Just search KC Sports Network. Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this. But Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error. Get the Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Entertain, educate, inform. KC Sports Network.
Welcome back in to Mizzou, That's Who. I just asked a question just before we hit break. Do you think that all of this 24/7, 365 kind of changes the way that teams are restructured? Are we going to see basically like NFL organization types around these college football teams, these college football programs, not even just football, maybe into basketball too, where you start to see more front office roles for coaches that are maybe wanting to take a step back and maybe they want to do more of the player development stuff. Maybe they want to do more of the on-court stuff so they get to take a step from the player development side. What do you think, Gabe?
I think it's already started to happen. I mean, you've got people across the country that have general managers. Every school has people whose sole focus is the transfer portal. Like, I don't think those people are ever allowed to leave their office. They just sit there and wait for a new name to pop in the transfer portal and then have to immediately figure out if that's a guy they should call, or if they work at Arkansas, they just automatically have to call them. That's a job requirement. And I say that, too. It's not like Missouri did not contact 874 transfers this offseason. Yeah. But, yeah, I think it's going that way. And, like, I think it'll require coaches to figure out what they're good at. I think you see Eli Drinkwitz doing it a little bit. Like, he brought in Kirby Moore, and I think part of that is, okay, what's my strength? I'm a really good talker and salesman, and I'm good with these donors and getting some money lined up. So maybe I focus a little more time on that and let Kirby Moore figure out what to call on third and six. You know, and the upside of that for Eli is if third and six goes wrong, he can still say, hey, man, that Kirby Moore fault. I didn't do that. That wasn't me.
Right.
Well, you see it all the time on Twitter, too. You see these recruits and, you know, they're always retweeting each other's things or their high school teammates' things. And you see they're tagging people in their posts. They don't tag the head coach in their posts a lot. They're tagging their directors of recruiting or the people that they're hanging out with while they're on their trips. And a lot of the times, that's not necessarily the head coach. It could be the position coaches or whatever, but a lot of the time, it's not the head coach. Or you see associate head coaches or things like that. Like, those are the people they're building their relationships with to get them to school. So I agree with Gabe. I think it's already happening on most campuses. And if it's not, it probably will soon.
You got to evolve before you get left behind, basically, is kind of how this whole thing has gone. And Gabe, I don't really know very much about the bill that Mizzou Athletics endorsed that got passed. It has something to do with, I think, high school recruits and yeah. NIL. I think that was a big step, or at least they wanted me to think that it was a really big step in terms of NIL for Mizzou.
So basically what it means is that a kid who goes to high school in the state of Missouri, if he signs with an in-state school, be that SLU, Rolla, Mizzou, whatever, he can start getting name, image, and likeness money that day. So, like, he could sign a letter of intent with Missouri on December 19th, and he's eligible to start earning money that day. Whereas if you are with an out-of-state school, or if you're an out-of-state student, you have to wait until you're actually on campus. So it's basically giving Missouri a six-month head start to pay kids. I'm going to say the smart part and the popular part before I say the unpopular part. As Eli Drinkwitz said this morning, like, this law has drawn some criticism, and he said, look, we're using the rules as they are to give ourselves an advantage. And he's right. Like, that's what you do. You use the rules as they are to get an advantage. Now, we could start a different podcast about, really, this is what state legislatures are doing? This is what we're worried about. Yeah. Let's find a way to help the state school cheat in football. Because, like, everything else in society is awesome. We're doing great. So let's really focus on this. I mean, it's ridiculous. My favorite part of the law, and Oklahoma has one that's the same way, which was initially vetoed by their governor, and I think now has gone through. And I think there are other schools. Like, the Missouri law legitimately says the NCAA is not allowed to come in and investigate and penalize us for things about this. Like, it just says, we get to do this how we want, and you are not allowed to come say that we can't do it that way. What the hell are we doing, guys? Like, the way this has been implemented is so stupid and broken. I don't know the answer and how to fix it, but it still is just beyond me that they have convinced fans not only to pay the money, but to pay some of the money that we're seeing. Like,
yeah.
This is insanity how it's going.
I mean, schools have been doing it for years, though. I mean, you think of the things that those large schools have been, I mean, when I say large schools, I mean, teams have been winning national championships. I mean, the homes they've been giving to kids and the cars they've been giving to kids for dollars. I mean, it's insanity. We've been behind, you know, and I don't know if they have, you know, government policies or anything like that to protect them. But and I'm not saying it's right or wrong or anything like that, but we're definitely we've just been behind a lot of other states in terms of things like this.
They've managed to get this so that this is a tax write-off. Paying a kid to play college football is now a tax write-off. I mean, and again, like, I'm not saying it. This has nothing to do with the kids making money. Make every dime you can. Yeah, if somebody decides that Luther Burden is worth $18 million, then awesome. Way to go, Luther. Take it all. And your grandchildren are never going to have to work. It's not, it just is, I don't know. And like Drinkwitz said this morning, he's like, look, this is a broken system. But I don't know how soon it's going to change or what changes. You know, I mean, I think eventually this gets to them being employees of the school. And that's the only place I think it can go that makes any sense. Because I'm curious how long it will go. And look, I know you guys are high rollers. I know that Desiree and Eli are on the phone to you guys going, hey, I need a 7-figure check because I got this kid. So I know you guys are the ones writing that check. But at what point do some of these people that are writing these checks go, I just spent all that to go 8-4. Or I just spent all that to make the second round. You know, and when does it stop? Now, the counter argument is John Ruiz, I guess, is probably pretty happy with his investment because it got him a Final Four. And if that's what's important to him, then great at Miami. But I just think at some point, most people aren't going to get their money's worth out of this. And I wonder if it changes, if some of these schools. But the problem is, if you're the booster at Missouri that says, I'm not getting my money's worth out of this, the coach is going to come back and go, well, cool, then we have no chance. Like, now we're even further behind.
I feel like you're going to find that question out pretty soon for schools like Texas A&M. And I'm not sure. I think Texas A&M will be better this year than they were last year, just because they're a really good class. We're all freshmen, and I don't think
tough not to be.
Right.
What'd you say?
It's tough not to be.
Right, exactly. I think they'll be a little bit better, but who knows? But it's kind of like you said, they're tax write-offs. I donate to the Tiger Scholarship Fund. I donate to Every True Son. And, you know, I get a 501c3 in my email and I put it with my tax stuff and then put it, you know, get it, file it away for next year. So, I mean, why would I not do that if I can write it off on my taxes and it's going to going back to Mizzou? I mean, it doesn't, and I'm not sure if that'll change one day. It doesn't really make a lot of sense government wise of why they would make it a tax write-off, but I'm going to take advantage of it while it is, because I want to donate to my school. And also I always owe taxes. So it just makes sense for me. But you know, that's a plug. So everybody knows it's a 501c3 if you want to donate to NIL. It is really a crazy system. It's a botched system. I don't know what they do moving forward, but I'm going to do what they're doing until I can't do it anymore.
And Gabe, you mentioned this isn't just for college football. Like, this is for all
sports. Yeah, I mean, this is for, like, I don't know if school in Missouri have a rowing team, but, like, if you were a rower and you signed with UMKC, I'm sure there's a huge NIL market for that. So
And that brings me to the next point of, like, just, like, the transfer portal in college basketball, I think, has gotten a lot out of hand, too. As you said, you mentioned Miami getting where they got with the transfer portal. There's a lot going on with the transfer portal. And Missouri has done their due diligence in the basketball transfer portal as well to kind of stock up on some depth as we switch gears here to the basketball side of things since we've left off. Last time we recorded a podcast, Missouri lost to Princeton. They just kind of, it just looked like they ran out of gas in that game, just didn't have the depth that they really needed to in that game. And they have tried to address that as they've added here to two, four, I wrote down five guys, but I think they've added more than that in the freshman class as well. I think they have five transfers and a couple freshmen coming in. So they're going to have a lot of bodies on this year's team.
A lot of new guys, a lot of, I mean, we know Nick Honor's coming back. Aiden Shaw is coming back. Noah Carter's coming back. Sean East is coming back. Labor Majak is coming back, I think. That may be it. I may be missing somebody. I don't know. I always miss somebody every time I run it down. By the time a lot of people listen to this, we'll probably know if Kobe is coming back, and I would extremely lean toward the answer to that being no. I think there's a better chance that Kobe Brown is a first-round draft pick than that he is playing college basketball next year, to be quite honest. I'm not sure he'll be either one, but I don't think he's coming back. Despite, sorry to break the hearts of the Arkansas, Alabama, and Kentucky fans who seem absolutely convinced that.
Wait, he's not highly likely. He's not highly likely entering the transfer portal, and he's not going to be on Coach Cal's team, because I was told that was a high likely possibility that that was happening.
I think it is a high likely possibility that he's playing in like Oklahoma City next year or somewhere. No, I think he's probably staying in the draft, and I think he should. It's what I've thought he should do since he made the decision. I mean, we've talked about this. He's not going to be a better prospect next year than he is this year. This is his chance, and this is where the disconnect exists, right? Because I know there's a lot of fans out there that are going, well, if we can pay him more money and he can be the big man on campus, why wouldn't he want to do that? Literally every one of these kids, since they could dribble a basketball, has wanted to play in the NBA.
Right.
And it's not a certain, it's the highest level you can possibly reach at what they're doing. And the emotional draw of being the big man in Columbia, Missouri, just isn't the same for these players as it seems like it would be for a fan. So if he's got that shot, and frankly, I actually think it's worse for Missouri short term. Like, Missouri would be better next year with Kobe Brown on the team.
For sure.
Not. But you know what will really help Missouri? Is if they've got a guy who actually played legitimate minutes here that they can point to playing in the NBA. Because right now they do have one. Jordan Clarkson still playing. But like, and I get why they pump up the MPJ connection and all that. But like, Kobe is more of a Missouri guy that you can point to as the reason he's there is this school, you know, than Michael is, simply because of the way Michael's thing went. So the point is the more guys you have playing in the pros, the better marketing it is on the recruiting trail for your program.
Here's kind of a question. You just saw within, I guess, late last week, maybe Thursday or Friday, you saw McCullough for Kansas declared that he was coming back, and he was probably, I would say, what, second round?
I think
somewhere around second round. Do you think that's he probably came back because the NIL money is so much greater at Kansas than it would be for a second round draft pick, and maybe it's different at Mizzou?
I think every kid's situation is a little bit different. I think the thing with Kobe is that he is 23 years old. He is already old for the NBA. I mean, there are guys in the NBA that are his age that are right now negotiating their second contracts, you know? So I think every kid's situation is different. And I've said since the beginning, I just didn't think it was going to be a financial decision for Kobe. Like, Missouri can pay Kobe probably more than he is going to get guaranteed from an NBA team just for this 1 year. But maybe he gets 2 years guaranteed. Oh, and again, he's a year closer to a second contract, and he's living his. I think there are some kids, like you saw Drew Timmy do it last year at Gonzaga. He said, look, I can make more money at Gonzaga than I can make, because Drew Timmy wasn't getting drafted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Janai Broome just came back to Auburn this morning, and I was a little surprised. I don't study a lot of NBA mock drafts. I thought he was probably a second round pick. Most people said he was projected not to get drafted, so he's coming back to Auburn. I'm sure he'll make some good money, and then he'll go take his shot next year to be drafted. Maybe he will, maybe he won't, you know. But I just think it's different with every kid. With McCullough, I don't know where he was going to be picked, and I don't know if he has a chance to be a high pick next year or not.
And I think that when you look at this team that Missouri has right now, as you mentioned, they would have been better with Kobe Brown on the floor. But I do think that it does make a lot of sense for him to stay. Caleb Brown, I believe, did enter the transfer portal as well, if I believe that's correct, too. So I know a lot of people kind of pointed to that as him coming back and entering the transfer portal. But I don't, as we already said, there's not much credence to that as well. Missouri added, if you like to take stock in any rankings boards, On Three's board of the Missouri Tigers basketball team and their transfer class has them at number 5 in the country right now.
Somebody's going to have to do the math on how those rankings are figured out, because where they rank the individuals does not make sense with where they rank the team.
Listen, don't shoot the messenger here. I'm just trying to give out some good news, but you're right, Gabe. You are right. I think that Dennis did a good job getting some guys in here. Tamir Bates, I think, was one of those guys off the jump that was a lot of talked about. But there's one guy in particular that there's been a lot of buzz about. He's transferring from a school. That is a blue blood that we'll talk about coming up right after this. Another professional tease by me. I'm on a roll.
Thanks for listening to KC Sports Network. Make sure you download our new app. Find it on the App Store or Google Play. Just search KC Sports Network. Entertain, educate, inform. KC Sports Network.
All right, welcome in to Mizzou That's Who. We're talking hoops here, and I think that this guy, it's Caleb Love from North Carolina, if you haven't figured out by now who we're talking about. A very interesting path that he's taken, played really well at North Carolina, and then, you know, didn't play his best season last year, chose to transfer to Michigan, had some, I believe it was academic requirements, didn't quite meet at Michigan, and is transferring again. Now, I think Missouri was in the race the first time he committed to Michigan. Don't know how deep into the race that they actually got now Missouri fans think that they are deep into the race to claim Caleb Love again, even so far as to speculate if he's in Columbia. Gabe, you're already shaking your head.
I've seen nothing that indicates to me that this is a thing this time around. It was last time. When he first entered the portal, I had multiple people tell me he entered the portal to come to Missouri. Like, that was the expectation. And then it didn't happen. And here's why I said I wouldn't pursue him the second time. That's twice now that you've gone after him. And, like, he said all the right things. And it sounded really good. And then he kind of went out with somebody else, which is certainly his right. But, like, I don't know how many times he asked the same girl out, man. Like, maybe she don't want to date you, and that's okay. Also, unless Caleb Love grows 5 inches, I don't know. Like, since the last time, they added Tamar Bates, and they added Caleb Grill. Like, they like the guys they have. Mm-hmm. If Caleb Love comes here, those dudes are not locked into being at Missouri until they go to a class this summer. So, like, if they go chase Caleb Love and he commits, like, Caleb Grill could be like, oh, yeah, I'm going to go do that West Virginia thing. No problem. But I think the bigger thing, and look, it is, I think, very fair for people to worry, is like Tucker, like, it's you and Noah Carter in the front court maybe
right
next year. You know, I mean, last year's team was not big, but this year's team is less big than that.
Yeah, we need a rim protector. I mean, and the sad thing is that we miss out on a lot of rim protectors. And I mean, what, you're not going to beat out Texas for NIL. That's kind of the issue with NIL for me, is that there's just going to be some schools, and I know that Mizzou's taking a lot of heat for NIL, and we're taking it, you know, we're taking it from K-State fans, we're taking it from KU fans, we're taking it from a lot of people, oh, we're so broke, and maybe we don't have as much. But we're never going to beat out Texas for NIL. It's just never going to happen. We're probably never going to beat out Miami for NIL. It's just never going to happen. I mean, those places have more money.
But it could. I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, there are rich people that have gone to Missouri. My understanding of what has gone on, and I want to be clear, but like with Caden Shedrick, I don't know for sure. I don't know how much money. I'm sure he got money to go to Texas. Every transfer is getting something, pretty much. Like, let's not pretend that the guys that are going anywhere or going there for free. But like, I don't know how much he got at Texas, but my understanding, like with the Matthew Cleveland situation and with some of these other things, has not been that this is money that Missouri simply can't come up with. It has been Dennis Gates saying, that doesn't make sense. Just if that's the price tag, we're not going to do this. You know, this is not the way we're going to build this team, is by paying that amount of money to that kid. Because this is all monopoly money for media and fans to throw around, right? Like, well, I don't know. I guess if every kid takes $750,000, cool, then we've just got a $13 million roster. Let's go do it. But here's the problem with that. If you pay player X $750,000, what happens with the kid on your team who averages more points than he does next year? He goes, well, I know that dude got 750 last year, so I'm 850 now. Yeah. And the next transfer, like, there's got to be some fiscal responsibility in it from the head coach. And I think Dennis has done that based on everything I've heard. You know, so it's not just about having money. It's about spending the money the right way. I mean, just because you have $500 when you go to the grocery store, like when you get to the checkout line, you don't go, well, I got $137 left, so give me 137 of those candy bars. You don't have to spend it all. Like, it is not a requirement.
Well, NIL can't technically be performance-based either, right? Like, you can't... I mean, it is, but it can't technically be.
Rules. There are no rules. They can do anything they want.
That is what it says, though, right?
That's what it says. NIL is also not a recruiting inducement.
Right.
It's literally the only thing it is. Uh-huh. I mean, the three kids who made the most money on Missouri's campus last year had never played before for Missouri last year. That's all it is a recruiting inducement everywhere. So, yeah, it's the whole broken system thing. We're doing this all wrong.
Yeah, and I'm glad that you brought up the size of this team, Gabe, because that's where I was kind of going. As you look at some of these guys, okay, base transfers from Indiana, okay, average 6 points a game, cool. You know, Don Tongi from Colorado State, 14 points a game. Yeah, 6'4", got Omaha native, you know, played all 4 years. Good veteran guy, kind of reminds you a little bit of Nick Honor type guy. Caleb Grill, can't shoot it. He's a guard. Kurt Lewis from the JUCO, they won his JUCO defense or JUCO player of the year. He won a title in the Division I junior college circuit, 14 points per game. He's a guard. And then they got Jesus, which his last name, I don't really want to try to pronounce, and I'm going to butcher it. I just know I will. But you guys know who I'm talking about. Big dude, didn't play last year. Yeah, that probably sounds right. But he played, I think, 10 games last year. And that's what you're leaning on right now, is a guy who played 10 games last year and Noah Carter.
But it's May 30th. Like,
sure. Yes.
This time last year, Isaiah Mosley had not committed to Missouri.
We still don't even know about Isaiah Mosley, by the way.
Right. We don't know if he's committed to Missouri for next year either.
Right.
I'm just saying they could still add somebody. You know, I mean, somebody could still, in the next 29 hours, somebody could pull out of the draft and be in the portal and Missouri could add him. But the other option is, this is like the 2012, like Frank Hayes' first team on steroids, right? Like, okay, we understand that Kim English has to guard Jeff Withey on one end, but also on the other end, Jeff Withey has to guard Kim English.
Yeah.
You know, and we're just going to play super fast and we're going to shoot 900 three-pointers and we think we're going to do it well enough that it doesn't really matter that we can't stop you inside. But, like, I understand the concerns about the size, because this team could not rebound last year.
No.
And it seems to be, I did find it interesting, by the way, when DeMoy Hodge went to that G League combine, he had 10 rebounds in one game. I'm like, I never saw DeMoy have 10 rebounds. Maybe they really just did tell him, like, don't rebound. We don't want to do that. That we don't want to be good at that. That's the thing we want to be bad at. But the flip side of that is, sitting here, if we would have been doing this podcast a year ago, I would have told you I was incredibly concerned about Missouri's roster. And, you know, as I've called them a few times, Kobe Brown and the Horizon League All-Stars had the best season they've had in a while. So maybe Dennis deserves a little benefit of the doubt.
Some respect. respect on.
We were 355th in total rebounds last year. Just throwing that out.
Sounds about right.
There's eight or nine below. So
I built it every single game.
So, to quote, I think it was Buddy Bell. Don't ever say it can't get worse.
I really do think that they're in a pretty decent spot, like depth wise. Right now, if you look at the depth of this team, I feel a lot more confident in the backcourt situation, right? Because sometimes they just ran out of guys, like especially with Trego Melian getting hurt late in the year last year, Isaiah Mosley not dealing with his stuff, not having, like, you went into that season thinking, okay, we got some guards here, and then you didn't have any
things. Happen.
So things happen; they do. And to have guys like this on is going to be good for the depth of it.
Oh. And they do have, like, two of their freshmen are tall. I mean, Trent Pierce is 6'9".
Sure.
Jordan Butler, 7 foot. Now, are they going to play major minutes? I don't really know. But I think they're going to have to contribute, at least the way the roster is currently constructed.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see. We'll obviously keep you updated on the basketball front. But as we get closer to football season, we're going to be doing a more football podcast, but thought we would give you guys a little bit of an update on what's been going on since we recorded last. Gabe, I don't know. You don't have like access to summer practices, right? Like they keep that oh, sucker locked up.
Also, I would not want it.
For sure. No, I get that. But I think that a lot of, if I know anything about college coaches, one thing they love is total control of their program. They would, if they did not have to talk to media or if they did not have to let anything get out, they would absolutely love it. And I know a conversation has been had about injury reports being added to college athletics because of the gambling side of things and the gambling on college athletics. Very interested to see how that would go over with coaches because they do not like to give injury reports.
Eli did it. He's done it the last couple of years, and I appreciate it.
Oh, wow.
Now, I'm not going to say they've always been 100% accurate, but like he does put out an injury report on Thursdays. And usually if a kid's not playing, he tells. Oh, no, maybe an exception here and there. But yeah, for the most part, I think he's been pretty good with it. I don't know. I saw the other day, I think the over-under on Missouri is 6.5 wins for this season.
I thought I pulled.
Like, I'll say this. They've set it in the right place.
Yeah.
It's where they're going to put us every year. I mean, they're going to put us there. They're going to put us 13th overall in the SEC, 6th overall in the SEC East. We're going to be in the same spot every year. You don't even have to really.
Until you prove you shouldn't be. And Missouri hasn't proven they shouldn't be.
Correct. Totally agree. When I said that in my Mizzou group chat, I said, well, I don't know why we're complaining. We've won 6 games, however many years. I mean, it's kind of right where we should be, I guess. I mean, I don't think we should be 13th in the SEC. I don't think that that's where we've been sitting. But, I mean, the win total is probably pretty spot on.
And I mean, like I went back and looked, you know, I went back and looked at like the preseason predictions for every year Missouri, like Missouri's first year in the SEC, they were picked 4th in the East.
Huh.
It wasn't like everybody just crapped on Missouri every single year. They were picked 4th and then they've never been picked higher than 3rd. I know that. So,
which that year we would have been a lot better if we hadn't lost our entire offensive line. You know what
and
I mean?
The quarterback.
Right.
And the quarterback. I mean,
but
we wouldn't have been bad in 2012.
Right. But in general, like, I don't know that picking this team 6th in the East is unfair, given what we know right now. Like they could be better than that. But knowing what you know today, you're not picking them ahead of Georgia, not picking them ahead of Tennessee. So we're really talking South Carolina, Florida, Kentucky. Would you pick them ahead of any of those teams, all those teams?
Well, it's hard for me not to say South Carolina because it's the same. You have to use the kind of the same mindset. Is it's like if we beat them 4 years in a row, how can you kind of not say that we think that we've played better if we're returning most of our production? You know what I mean? Like we return more production than they do and we have had a better than them last year. So I kind of don't understand that one. What am I?
I think they were eight. I think they were 8-4 last year, though, weren't they?
They were. They killed Tennessee, which baffles me. I don't.
Right.
That game is the wildest. Ain't Clemson. Yeah, that was the wildest thing to me. I think my biggest issue sometimes, though, with how they pick these things is it's not that I think that they say that Mizzou is unfairly picked against. It's not that I think that. I sometimes think that they pick other teams more in favor. Like, do you think that Arkansas should be picked as high with their win totals as they typically are? Because a lot of the times they pick them to be like 8-4 or something like that. And that's what kind of gets me. And I'm like, I don't understand why you always continue to pick us in these low places. And every year you kind of give them the benefit of the doubt, but they haven't done anything to kind of prove themselves in the past decade either. I mean, I think they had one good season under Pittman a few years ago, but that's really it. They've regressed ever since then. So I don't know. That's just my issue with them.
I do think Jefferson's coming back for them, right? Like, they're going to have him back.
They have Rocket Sanders. Catalan's gone. Lost Bumper Pool.
Like, I don't know what I don't know what the Vegas number for Arkansas is this year. Honestly, I have no idea. And I also don't have any idea who they play.
Right.
I mean, if we want to talk overrated, just talk Texas A&M. So for 40 years, Texas A&M has been the team that should, if they were worth in December what they were worth in August, they would be every bit as good as Texas A&M fans think.
Yeah, I totally agree.
That's true. Well, okay. One last thing before we close the podcast, I don't want you to give any explanation for this. I just want you to give your answer. Nothing else. We're gonna go around the virtual room here. Who will be the starting quarterback for the Missouri Football Tigers when they take the field on Thursday? Gabe, I'm gonna put you on the spot here. Who do you think it'll be?
I'm saying Sam Horn by default. I'm saying Sam Horn because he's the last one I talked to. I mean, it's as good a reason as any. Yeah.
There you go, Maggie.
I'm going Brady Cook.
Ooh, we're all three going to be different because I think it's Jake Garcia's team. There we go. That's going to do it for. Okay.
Congratulations, Jake Leibel, Missouri starting quarterback for 2023. Nobody picked you.
Yeah, sorry, buddy. That's going to do it for this week's episode of Mizzou That's Who. Appreciate you guys listening to the podcast, as always. Let us know how you enjoy the podcast. Leave a 5-star rating and review. Be a friend. Tell a friend, as Pat McAfee says, about the podcast as well. We'll be back whenever Missouri does do something or we have something to talk about to give you another off-season update. We'll see. But appreciate you guys listening all the way in. We'll catch you later.
Thank you for listening to KC Sports Network. We appreciate your support. Don't forget to hit that follow button and leave us a review if you like what you heard. You can find all 6 of our channels covering the Chiefs, Royals, Sporting KC, and the KC Current, plus KU, K-State, or Mizzou by searching KCSN wherever you listen to podcasts. We're also on YouTube. Entertain. Educate. Inform. KC Sports Network.